I'm Natalie Baker from University of California, Irvine, and I did change the title of my talk, just to warn everybody. It's now called Adapting Practices in Disaster, Temporary Normals and Resilience, and Implications for Preparedness. This is a co-authored paper. I am representing Martha Feldman, PhD, and Victoria Lowerson, MPH, from University of California, Irvine, School of Social Ecology, Department of Planning, Policy, and Design. So here's my presenter disclosure. The following personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation existed during the past 12 months. No relationship to disclose. So as an introduction, as I'm sure most of you are aware, the residents of New Orleans, Louisiana were not prepared for the devastation of Katrina, though a catastrophic earthquake was predicted for many years. New Orleanians were accustomed to periodic hurricane evacuations without any consequence. So typically, if a hurricane was in the Gulf, people, if they evacuated, expected that it would be a three-day evacuation and they would return home without any consequence. However, in Katrina, this was not the case. People assumed they would return home to normal life and work after a typical three-day evacuation, but that did not happen. In general, research shows that people draw on and adapt their everyday practices to negotiate the changing disruptions of the immediate and extended effects of disasters. However, we know little about how people produce these efforts or how they relate to community preparedness for disasters. The paper I'm talking about addresses how members of a community alter their everyday practices to produce resilience after a catastrophe. And since we learn from disasters, this information needs to be applied in pre-disaster context. So this is our research question that we started with. It was, how did mental health care providers continue to provide care during and after Hurricane Katrina? So given I'm presenting you with my research question, I'm going to give you a little information about the methods we use. Our data collection was retrospective, in-depth interviews over the telephone with 35 New Orleans area mental health care professionals. This research was conducted between November 2008 and April of 2010, well after Hurricane Katrina. Now, even though we initiated this project 3 years after the storm, life in New Orleans was still considerably disrupted. We wanted to focus on people who practice mental health care in the New Orleans area because that system was also severely disrupted post-Katrina. And then we wanted to also to focus on people who were able to continue to provide some form of mental health care services after Katrina. So we looked for people who worked in New Orleans before the storm and worked wherever they worked, because a lot of people evacuated. And then returned to New Orleans and provided care up until the interview. So people had a really good were extensively familiar with the mental health care arena of New Orleans, although we didn't exactly achieve that goal. We had some other people who didn't work in New Orleans before Katrina, and then some who started working a considerable amount of time after the storm. That was unusual. And we also had some Baton Rouge area people who were working with evacuees from New Orleans. So we brought them into our population of informants. Our interview protocol asked about work prior to, during, and after Katrina. And we focused on informants' actions before and after Katrina. So we were interested in what they did related to their work. So this is a qualitative study. We collected and analyzed our data using grounded theory. In this approach, data are gathered and analyzed inductively. So we're not starting with hypotheses. We're producing theory and practical findings from the data that our informants, from what our informants are telling us. So theory emerges from the data, and we're not testing any prior theoretical constructs. The interviews were transcribed and coded using Atlas TI qualitative data analysis software in order to derive the themes and categories systematically from multiple rounds of really intensive coding. We became very familiar with our data. So Our first 18 interviews provided the foundation for our initial coding efforts. Based on this, we revised our interview protocol. Because we had found that informants discussed three distinct post-Katrina time periods characterized by the magnitude of disruption to life after the storm, and what we call these periods were based on what the informants were telling us. So we didn't create these terms, the informants did. So the first was the evacuation period, which was from right before Hurricane Katrina until about 5 days after the storm, because people were still evacuating for a long period of time after the storm hit. The surreal period is from that period until generally about a year after Katrina. So these, again, aren't distinct time periods based on linear time. They're based on the informant's experience as they described it. And the new normal period was from about a year after Katrina up until this day. So we re-interviewed 8 of the initial 18 to include questions on this topic, and then continue to use this revised interview protocol for the next 16 interviews. And then we developed further categories and themes based on these codes. So from these efforts, we created what we called action pattern constellations, although we debated what we would call this numerous times. And then we organized these by temporal period to produce our findings. So this is an example of our action pattern constellation. I'll give you a backstory. Obviously, this is a pseudonym. This is not the informant's real name. So June was a therapist in pre-Katrina New Orleans. And in her job, what she typically engaged in was that she conducted therapy sessions in an office in a nonprofit organization in New Orleans. So she would have regular clients. She would see them week by week. And she was a therapist. She would do therapy sessions. So we organized these by their pattern, so their work pattern, and then by the actions they engaged in related to that pattern. So old pattern was therapy sessions. We also organized the table by disruption because that was important, and people changed their patterns, their work patterns and actions based on the disruption. So this particular disruption was the dispersal of clients because of Katrina evacuation. And then she also evacuated to Tennessee. And clients would call her and say, can you talk to me? I need help. I'm here. I'm in this area, back in New Orleans or back in Baton Rouge. Are you coming back to New Orleans? Can you come and see us?" And she would. She needed to work. She also wanted to make sure to provide her clients with some care. So she would commute back and forth from New Orleans to Tennessee, and she would hold therapy sessions in a coffee shop. So this is dramatically different than the way she would engage her work before Hurricane Katrina. And so this was during the surreal period when things were very disrupted in New Orleans and in the area. And then this is her engaging in different actions to produce the same pattern she did before the storm. So that old pattern would be therapy sessions. And we did a lot of these action pattern constellations. And we found 4 major categories of adaptations that the informants reported. And so the old actions, old pattern was what used to be. So it's the old normal. It's the time before the storm. It's the work they did before Katrina. So example was working as a therapist in a private practice. The second was we found people engaged new actions and new patterns. And we call this doing different tasks. So an example is we had one therapist who reported doing relief work during Hurricane Katrina. So this is this therapist engaged in entirely new actions and did an entirely new job as a result of the experience of Katrina. We also found that people engaged in new actions in order to produce old patterns, as I said before. We call this doing tasks differently. The example is the therapist conducting sessions in a coffee shop. We also had therapists who were conducting therapy sessions in FEMA trailers, on park benches, and in restaurants, so in dramatically different contexts. We also found, and then we found very little of this, but there were people who reported engaging new actions who were not able to enact any successful pattern. So we found that this was, we called it chaos. The good thing is that most people don't report this. So an example is we had a mental health care worker who was like a quasi-social worker who worked for the school system of the, I think it was Jefferson Parish, and she, during Katrina evacuation, was called by the organization to do relief work, so to manage donations. But the donations were so large that it was so, and it was so overwhelming that she wasn't able to do any sort of successful work, and she referred to this as drowning. But we saw very little. We saw more people engaging new actions and new patterns, or doing different tasks and doing tasks differently than we did any of these four major categories of adaptation. And so we also found that the ways the informants adapted their practices and actions changed based on the temporal periods in ways that promoted resilience. So they found ways to support clients' and employees' basic needs during the evacuation period. They began to identify components of the mental health care system that were present and absent during the surreal middle period, and then they recreated or built community resources during the long period of disruption that followed in the new normal period. So our data and analysis show how the provision of mental health care for our informants changed over the course of the long Katrina experience. So over the three temporal periods, we see that our informants combined their skills, their commitment to mental health care, and their physical presence to recreate a context in which they could care for their clients in the form of temporary normals. And these temporary normals changed. Informants also learned to experience the environment differently and added to their repertoire of experiences in providing mental health care. So adaptations to patterns of action and the creation of temporary normals and the production of new or refined or redefined organizations are all ways of configuring resources so that informants can continue to provide care. So drawing on organizational literature, Wyke and Sutcliffe argue that resilience involves an ability to respond to a disruption in a way that enables the system to continue performing. We also know that resilience is not a process of anticipation, rather mitigation, because uncertainty is always inevitable. But mitigation requires flexibility or adaptability. And flexibility helps people develop coping skills by combining parts of what they previously did into new practices, whether they look entirely new or something like they did before. And so ultimately, the creation and recreation of patterns of action and flexible and resilient responses to disaster is important because it helps us see that people move from disruption to new normal through creating temporary normals, and how temporary normalcy affects the patterns enacted in the surreal and normal, new normal periods. So that's pretty theoretical. In conclusion, so in our research, we wanted to understand how people adapt their work and their actions to challenging conditions to continue to provide care in and after large-scale disasters. Previous research shows that people can and will act in improvisational and inventive ways to communicate with each other, to continue to work, and to provide care in disrupted environments in order to negotiate disruption over time. Our research contributes to this picture because we identify the differences in patterns of disruption and adaptation in the three temporal periods. We also show the specific actions people take to accommodate disruption and to enact resilience on the individual and system level, the system being mental health care. So here are the public health policy applications of our research. We make the following recommendations to professionals, organizationals, and policy makers to draw attention to the ways that they can encourage and maintain, help people maintain flexibility to develop pre-crisis resilience and new ways to prepare. Many of the adaptations we saw in the evacuation and surreal periods are carried over into the new normal, so they become part of the work they do and part of the system. And the new normal is not the same as the old normal. So disruption continues to unfold for a long period of time in large-scale disasters. And adaptations continue to emerge and to affect how people provide service. It's not just the immediate aftermath of a disaster that matters. So we need to pay attention to how people living and working in affected localities describe continuing or changing disruption over time, and how are they able to continue responding to provide care. And it's good to know that people will continue to provide care after great disruption. So chaos, as we saw, it doesn't happen that often. So for preparedness, the question is the public prepared? And based on the interviews, we could argue that our informants were grossly unprepared for Hurricane Katrina, despite experience with previous evacuations. However, their lack of preparedness in the traditional sense was compensated by their overwhelming ability to negotiate multiple disruptions over time in ways that produced resilience. Because traditional preparedness and planning efforts typically fail in disaster response, more effort needs to be invested in understanding and developing a community or organization's capacity for flexibility and resilience in pre-disaster contexts that can be applied through changing disruptions over time. So the public is prepared and they're not prepared. They're prepared in the non-traditional sense. And that's it. So no questions right now, I guess. Thank you.